Hello and welcome to a TMCNet podcast. My name is Rich Tarani. I'm the president of TMC, and I'm pretty excited to be bringing you a great interview, which is with a person who you've heard from before here at Tarani.com, my blog. It's Laura Howard. I want to say hi, Laura. How are you?
Hi, Rich. I'm great.
And Laura is the CMO of ECI Telecom. Today is January the 20th, and it's 2009. And as we're speaking, I'm watching on my screen, President Barack Obama is being sworn in. And it's, from what I understand, minus 10 degrees with a wind chill in D.C., and cannons are being fired on my screen. So pretty historic times. Right, Laura?
Yeah, it's really exciting. I'm excited to do this podcast, but I also have it on in the background as well. I think it's going to be a great opportunity for change, to quote the dear one himself.
I think there's going to be lots of change, and so I guess if there are any pauses during this podcast, the explanation will be that we're just looking to see what's going on here with these millions of people jumping up and down. I guess they're either excited or trying to keep warm. I haven't figured it out, but
start with the trying to keep warm angle. I'm up in Boston, so I'm about 10 degrees colder, but it is very, very cold here.
So hopefully we've got some interesting things to talk about today, maybe some hot news that we can segue into. So we'll go from the very cold to the very hot, or at least warm. I know that I've got a bunch of things I want to talk to you about since we last had our conversation. And you had recently gone private, and we had discussed what it meant to be private. And I'm curious now, it's been about a year, how is the company doing as a private company?
I'm excited to let you know, Rich, that we've just sort of wrapped up our books, and though we're private, and I can't get into the specifics, I can tell you that we've had an unprecedented 25% year-over-year order intake growth. It exceeded our own business expectations. We've also doubled our backlog, so it wasn't, you know, the typical end-of-year crunch, and we surpassed our revenue plan as well. Order intake is fairly equivalent to bookings. It's the amount of business that you've booked but not shipped, where revenue, as you know, is what you've actually recognized as incoming revenue to the business.
So theoretically,
so we've had a really great year.
So theoretically, and I don't know how much of this you are comfortable disclosing as a private company, but I would imagine there's been some revenue pressure, some deflationary pressure in the last year, and subsequently, even if you booked the same amount, it could be a lower amount of revenue. Is that an accurate statement?
I'm not at liberty, because I just don't have the data points to really talk about the revenue specificities, because there has been so much going on in the area of currency change. I know that being in finance is definitely one area I would not want to be in these times. The revenue plan, though, is strong, and not an area of concern because of the currencies. I think if we were cutting it close, it would be an issue. The point that I'm trying to make is our revenue is very strong, our order intake is very strong, and our backlog is very strong. And we attribute that to the focus and approach that we've taken to the market, which is something you and I have talked about in previous conversations, really leveraging the uncertainty of, you know, network requirements. This migration to NGN plays right into our sweet spot with a really, really flexible approach, that whole OneNet business framework that we've talked about before.
Do you want to give us just some highlights on some of the other interesting things, and maybe any of the challenges that you think would be interesting for people to know about?
Well, in terms of 2008, our major strategies were to get into the data networking business, which we did very successful. We launched our 9,000 family of switch routers, and we actually exceeded our order intake targets for that product line as well. Now, as a new product, it's not representing the core revenue stream for the company yet, but eventually we do see it eventually, you know, replacing the XDM, you know, when we've got a primarily packet-oriented network. But we've been very pleased with that. We've received a number of industry awards, and we've had some customer announcements in that place. We've announced Elro, interestingly enough, they're a utility provider, and they're one of the ones that are out on the cutting edge where they're building a communications network not just for their own internal use or to be a carrier of carrier, but they're actually going to be offering carrier Ethernet-based services at a retail level, and we're really excited to be part of that. We've also announced Metro Systems, and one of our largest deployments in one of the top five North American MSOs. We haven't announced the company specifically. I'm really pleased to see that the scale of it is holding up very, very well. As you know, the approach that we took to the switch Ethernet switching and routing market was one of very high density and great ease of use. And so to have a network of this scale be deployed and to have it be, you know, functioning in all cylinders, shooting in all cylinders, is really a great thing to see. It gives my own sales organization the confidence to stand behind, you know, the marketing brochure, if you will.
That's great. Now,
Go ahead.
No, after you, please.
Okay, well, we weren't just about our CSER, you know, entrance, our data networking entrance in 2008. We also began operating the company on our new optimized structure. As you know, we simplified our organizational structure. We outsourced manufacturing. We created a customer-facing entity, what we call Global Sales and Marketing, and we created a Network Solutions Division, which is R&D and all of our product strategy group, and we created a services business. And those three sort of, you know, build the product, sell the product, support the product, seems to be working extremely well in keeping us close and in tune with our customers. We've had continued success in emerging markets and emerging technologies. We reclaimed our leadership position in India. We have worked with third-party analyst firms to validate our leadership position in transmission in Russia. And we continue to penetrate with exciting technologies like packet, optical packet-based solutions and GPON. And finally, we've entered some new markets, and we've made a bit of a public splash, if you will, around some specific technology solutions with partners in the wireless space, specifically Alvarion in WiMAX and Saragon in microwave to really enhance our backhaul capabilities. So all around, it was a great year for ECI.
Well, that's very exciting. So in our last conversation, you also said that you expected to see more traction and success in software and other non-hardware-related areas, such as the services business. How's that looking?
It's looking really good on the services side. I'll address software in a second. We wanted to have our services business represent much more of our revenue stream. It's very typical for an equipment vendor to have about 10% of their revenue to come from product-attached services like warranty and whatnot. And we ideally wanted to have much more of our revenue coming from the services space. Where we had already achieved the 10% target, we really had to look at new types of services. And we specifically focused on managed services and what I would call turnkey projects, where we go in and we actually take like a general contracting role, not just in providing the equipment, but actually in general contracting the civil engineering work, working with vertical third parties for non-telecommunications elements of a network, doing the network design and planning and installation. And in some cases, we've actually done carried it all the way through to the managed services component.
Wow.
I would say that we've increased our services revenue 50% year over year. So we surpassed what we set as a business target, but it is a very I don't want to say risky. It's a very sensitive market to enter. When you start to deal in the soft side of the business, specifically on the services side, it's essential that you be able to meet or exceed expectations. I'm not saying that's not important on the product side as well, but when you've always been a product company and you have that track record, It becomes even more important when you enter a new area like managed services or turnkey program management. And so we've taken it on a very case-by-case basis. And I believe that we are well ahead of where we would like to be, and I think that's in response to huge customer demand. Customers are looking not just to vendors to be technology partners, but they're looking for them to help optimize the network, to take control of some of it. And I know in one of the networks that we haven't announced yet, we actually took on a percentage of their resources and are managing some of their older legacy equipment. And we're able to do that because our plan is to leverage that ability with some of the other legacy networks so we get some amortization of that investment. So you asked that in a two-part question. You asked me how services was doing, and we're really pleased there, as I said, 50% year-over-year growth on that business plan. On the software side, to be honest with you, I think we underestimated in product marketing the amount of work it was going to take for sales to get comfortable selling software, whether it be as a site license or a shrink wrap package or as a service. And so we're looking to take our time and do that a little bit better, get the sales force a little bit better trained. We've got some excellent technology, and we're looking for probably a mid-2009 launch because we really, to be successful here, we really need to have sales behind it, and it's a very different business model. So we're still committed to it strategically. We just didn't launch it as soon as I had initially hoped.
Interesting. So we're obviously in some challenging times, right? So the question is about in terms of visibility for the future and in the telecom space and technology. I've heard a few different points of view as to what's going to happen going forward in telecom. I'm really curious to get your opinion, being obviously a very important vendor in the market, in terms of what you think and what your company thinks the future of telecom is going to be.
Well, I would say broadly speaking that I think telecoms, much like healthcare and insurance, are going to benefit from these times because it's not a luxury business. It's a necessity. In fact, in the developed markets like North America and Europe, you see telecom actually growing because many people are relying on it for both, you know, personal entertainment and personal communication requirements. For example, using more video on demand at home rather than going out to movies, or having more time on communications networks talking with people. And in the business sector, we also have seen, as CNN had reported, there was a 17% decrease in U.S.-based business travel. But I don't see a corresponding decrease in sales quotas across many industries, and I can assure you that they're relying much more on communications infrastructure to have those kind of discussions and meetings with customers. I know that WebEx and other types of video conferencing applications have seen a spike in business that somewhat corresponds to the decline in business travel. In emerging markets, the news is good as well. We're seeing unprecedented growth in two of the hot emerging markets that we're focused on. One is in India, where they have surpassed, if you can believe it, they have surpassed the $10 million new subscribers per month benchmark. It was 8 million just 6 months ago, back when we talked at NextCon.
Wow.
And now, you know, now they're at 10 million a month. And those subscribers, even though they're you know, pretty much offering basic voice services and SMS, we haven't gotten to, you know, mobile broadband yet in India, still to support 10 million subs a month with projected strong growth. That's not going to level off. You could be upwards of 12 million subs a month. That's going to put tremendous pressure on the transport networks and the various backhauling networks. You also see in China another strong growth engine in the emerging sector, the thawing of the 3G license nightmare. The 3G licenses are beginning to roll out. The reorganization of the carriers are now in place, and you're actually seeing RFPs hitting the streets. So there's a lot of bandwidth being driven in the emerging markets by the sheer need to get people basic communications, and there's a growth for bandwidth and communication services in the developed market because people are staying more stationary, whether it's a businessman traveling less or a family not going out as much. The need to be connected is still there, and in the developed market, fortunately for them, it's for the higher bandwidth, higher revenue bandwidth services.
Fantastic. So a question about ECI and any changes that you've made to the company products or anything else to address the changing marketplace?
Well, I think that the approach that we took to entering the carrier Ethernet market is one that we were very lucky. I wouldn't tell you we sort of foresaw this. We weren't that smart. We just really lucked out that the approach that we took to carrier Ethernet, which was one of managed migration, sort of do it at your own pace, your own time, the ability to blend TDM traffic with packet traffic seamlessly, fits beautifully in these times of uncertainty. Carriers are so fearful of making capital expenditures because budgets are so restricted that the maximum amount of risk that you can take out of a decision puts you in the most favorable spot. And this is fundamental to our messages and to our whole approach to the market. So that hasn't changed. We have, as I mentioned, we reorganized our company. We restructured our company to be more streamlined, to be more efficient, and to be much closer to the actual customer. We've put more resources in the field. It's always been our philosophy to have a strong local presence so we don't have a lot of expats. We build, you know, very strong offices in the countries that we do business. For example, we have over 150 people in Russia.
Wow.
We have over 100 people in China. We have over 100 people in India, local people. I can tell you that some of the things that we've done due to this economic crisis is to be more cautious in our marketing spending. And as the CMO, I stand behind this decision. I think now is a time for vendors and customers to really hunker down and to make the kind of strategic investments that they need to that have longevity. Gone are the times of, you know, six-figure industry trade shows and six-figure advertising budgets. Most of our marketing spending is going to foster stronger relationships. We're doing much more one-to-one marketing activities. When I say one-to-one, that's ECI to a specific customer. We're relying much less on traditional industry venues and much more like companies like TMCNet that can give us platforms like this podcast and webinars and other ways to reach our audiences, like I said, using communications infrastructure in a much more high-touch, cost-effective manner. And so for the first time since I've been at ECI, I'm going on 3 years now, we've actually decreased what I would call traditional lead generation investments, new opportunity creation, and we've taken that funding and we've applied it to strengthening relationships and broadening relationships in existing accounts. And as I said before, we've really taken a step back from what I would call one-to-many, an ECI-to-many type venue that is face-to-face, such as an industry trade show or an industry conference and things like that, and are relying more on digital mediums and strategic partners like yourself to help us get that point, you know, to get our messages out.
Yeah, and we're thrilled to help companies like yours get the message out. And what I found in the last 5 years, and I've been doing this for decades, as you probably know, is that the advent of the Internet has really changed the way companies are marketing, and they are looking to do things like have more accountability in their marketing, and it's become a fascinating market to watch. The evolution of, you know, we're at the crossroads here at TMC where we used to rely on print publications and events to a company that's transformed into web as well as print and as well as events, and we've seen the transformation of IP totally revolutionize communication. So we're at the crossroad kind of these two unbelievable changes in two of the world's largest industries. And to me, it's fascinating to see how your company enables a lot of the communications to take place via your Metro Ethernet or your fiber products, and to see how industry is continuing to evolve.
What do you think, Rich, for telecom specifically, of the phenomenon of social networking as a viable marketing tool? I see it being used very successfully in the consumer market. I'm envious of those companies who can use social networking to virally launch a product with very low cost, such as the iPod or something.
Well, as you probably know, we have a lot of experience there because we have products called Channels and Communities that we work with a lot of companies to build. And what we found in the B2B space, at least in telecom, is the level of passion to get engaged in maybe promoting an optical product or a PBX is not at the same level of what it might be for a cool consumer application or a new brand or a new type of soft drink. The energy doesn't seem to be there in the B2B space. So what we found has been successful is to build communities that are news-based and content-based. Not that there isn't interaction. We also are very strong in blogging, and the blogging world allows interactivity, and we do see interactivity there. But it's tough to build a B2B community of people that interact to virally spread information about products. It's not as easy as it is in the consumer space. I, too, envy the consumer space because if you have a hit, like you said, you can have a hit where the consumers do all the marketing for you. And to me, I find it all fascinating. And how do you bring that excitement to the world of B2B? And it's not an easy thing to do, it seems.
Yeah, it's something that we seriously have been looking at. I told you that we had somewhat delayed the formal launch of some of our software-based products, and we were looking at identifying a very specific target within our existing accounts or specific prospects, and trying to do that through a blog focused on the type of application our software product addresses and whatnot. I'm a little bit nervous about it because I haven't seen it successfully work. I didn't realize it was as broad as B2B. I thought it just may be telecom specifically because each of the carriers are so competitive, they're not apt to share their positive views of one product over another. But it's with envy that I look at that.
Likewise, and to me, and there may be some business applications which are hotter than others in terms of social media, but to me it seems like it's a B2B issue. Or maybe it is just telecom. Our experience is primarily telecom, but tech is similar. I mean, it's really tough to get people excited about tech until you get to the consumer markets. Like if you write a negative thing about the iPhone, a negative blog about the iPhone, you're going to get a lot of response, but if you write something negative about a typical PBX, people aren't as religious.
Yeah, that's true.
It's not like, you know, it's tough to get somebody religiously oriented about an Avaya PBX, unless they worked for the company. I mean, it just doesn't have that same, I guess, appeal.
Worked for it, or they just made the strategic decision to buy it for their company. Otherwise, it seems sort of a yawn. Yeah, I hear you.
That's the challenge. So I'm curious, actually, you mentioned a little bit about developed and emerging markets, and I'm curious to hear what you're seeing in the markets and how they've been evolving this year. And I guess this year is a little early to say, but just over the last 12 months.
Well, as I touched about in terms of, you know, is this doom and gloom or is this an opportunity for telecom, when you talk about emerging markets, you can look at it both in terms of a regional opportunity and technology opportunity. As I said, in India, they haven't been affected as much by the economic crisis. You're not seeing the kind of credit crunch that you're seeing in some of the developed markets. You're seeing strong subscriber growth. We've been able to continue our leadership position there. And in fact, Sandra, help me with the number. What was it, 70% growth in India year over year order intake?
70%,
yes. Yeah, 70, you know, just truly phenomenal, phenomenal growth. One of the things that I'm nervous about is the fact that it's such a strong market that everybody and their brother's now heading there. What's the matter? I'm sorry. I was torn between 70. Rich, I have to go on record. It was 50% year-over-year growth in order intake. 70% was actually in Latin America. I knew we had two impressive
employees. Wow, those are significant numbers. And those primarily fiber? What are those? What were they buying?
Let's take them one at a time.
I apologize, by the way, because I realize that's a loaded question since you have multiple product lines.
Yeah. Not only do we have five main businesses, access, transport, solutions, military, and services, and we have five major RBUs, India, APAC, Russia, EMEA, and Americas, servicing 32 local offices, four primary languages, and over 100 top-level product SKUs.
We could have a six-hour podcast.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the cool things about ECI is that for a mid-tier player, and I say that with a lot of pride because it's in our size that we're able to compete, we're a very diversified business and really have a good handle on networking infrastructure from, you know, the access network all the way through to the core network. Now, you had asked me about some of the impressive growth numbers we've had in the emerging markets. We did 140% year-over-year growth in the African markets. That's predominantly in South Africa, and it's predominantly South Africa and Kenya, and it's predominantly around building optical transport networks.
Okay.
There's been some fixed access, but really the majority of the opportunity in Africa right now is to get those core regional networks in place. And the fact that we have a very one-net optimized, again, you can start with a TDM-centric MSPP and move to a packet-centric CSER in a highly integrated way, or if you're a greenfield operator and you want to market an all-IP network, you can start with a CSER. Given the flexibility of our core platforms, which are, you know, the CSER, the MSPP, or our MSAN, we've been very successful in that area. We've also seen a lot of the growth that we talked about in that civil engineering, the turnkey projects has come out of Africa as well because they value a vendor who is going to do more than just bring in the product. They want that expertise.
That's great. So you're not going to go segment by segment, country by country then, huh? I was hoping for that. Oh, I'm kidding. Sorry.
Because that would be a six-hour thing. But you asked about Africa. We also saw in Americas, which we consider both North America and Latin America, we saw an overall 40% increase in order intake year over year. And we're excited about that. We've been very successful in North America with our ROADM product. We had a highly innovative WSS ROADM implementation, and we really targeted the carrier-of-carrier space and hit a sweet spot. We also had our most significant CSER win, as I said, in the MSO space. On top of that, we had a 70% growth in Latin America, and 99% of that came out of Brazil. And I'm sure that's Sanders kind of crunching the numbers in the head. I may be exaggerating on the 99%, but I can tell you that Brazil was the key driver of that.
So is it possible that other parts of Latin America slowed down, but Brazil was just on fire? Because I know Brazil, I mean, from a commodity perspective and an agricultural perspective and ethanol, I mean, their economy was booming for a good part of last year.
No, we had a presence in Andean, but we were starting from a much fresher spot, so we hadn't built up the order intake stream. Mexico, we're kind of going through sort of a product transition phase. Sandra, did you want to add something?
No, we also have a lot of success in the Costa Rican market and also in the Caribbean with multi-dollar, you know, fiber deployments all across the region.
Yeah. So I wouldn't say that the fact that our growth came predominantly from Brazil is a factor that the rest of Latin America has slowed down. It's really more of our maturity in the other markets. In terms of the Caribbean number, we count that in the North American number.
Okay.
just the way we're organized, probably 6 in 1, 6 in 1/2 dozen in the other. And then again, we talked about that 50% order intake in India growth. And what I'm really excited about that is we finally made the cross-selling, we crossed that bridge where we leveraged our leadership in transmission. We've been primarily a provider of regional networks for cellular backhaul to access. And we've won one of the most strategic, second largest high-speed internet and wired broadband network pan-India. We haven't announced the vendor yet. We hope to do so this year. But we do have the contract in place. We've won the business. We're just waiting for the rollout before we announce the customer. So we're really excited about that.
Congratulations. So what I would like to know now, we've talked a little bit about the different geographies. What about the different types of carriers, like Tier 1, Tier 3, MSOs? I mean, are there any characterizations, generalizations we can make about the various types of companies you work with?
Yeah, and this is kind of a sad situation. This comes back to the economy. As you know, we sell to Tier 1s all the way through Tier 3s and MSOs. And in times such as this, we're finding that the Tier 1s have much easier access to credit than the Tier 2s and Tier 3s. Now, that plays well to our specific business strategy because in markets that are severely constrained like Russia, we're dealing primarily with Tier 1s, so that plays to our advantage. In markets where credit is not as much of an issue, such as China and India, and Africa has their own challenges when it comes to financing a global economics aside, we have been more successful in the Tier 2 and Tier 3. So in specific answer to your question, Tier 1s become important because of their financial ability to obtain the credit needed for expansion. Tier 2, Tier 3s, if you're going to play their MSOs, the alternative market, you've got to make sure as a vendor that they're well-funded or have secured funding before you deeply engage. Another thing that we've been very successful at that has helped fuel our growth is we haven't stayed in the traditional service provider space. There's a segment called utility telcos where they're a transportation utility or an energy utility, and we have been able to work with them to initially deal with their own internal communications requirements, but show them that because of the flexibility of the OneNet framework, whether it be an access technology or an MSPP for TDM networks or a CISA for packet networks, we've been able to show them that they can then segment their network very easily and derive revenue by leasing bandwidth capacity as a carrier. And as I said, with the example of Elro in EMEA, which we announced, they're actually generating significant growth themselves in the retail business. So not only are they just leasing bandwidth, they're actually offering retail services based upon the same infrastructure that they're selling bandwidth on or running their own communications infrastructure. And it's all on the same network. And the reason I bring up this interesting segment, and I'm sort of kicking myself now that I'm doing it on a podcast, because in part, it's part of our secret weapon. I can tell you that in this economic crisis, the utility companies are nowhere near as cash constrained as your traditional network operators, specifically compared to...
Interesting. Okay.
Yes. I want to edit that part out. Yeah, to be honest with you, though, we are expecting some fierce competition. I'm sure all my competitors are just as smart as we are. But we've got a highly optimized value proposition and solution geared very well there. And again, we're very well known in that vertical. So I guess I can strut my feathers a little bit here.
Interesting to see how the credit crisis just affects telecom equipment and where just your focus and financing.
Yeah, well, sales and revenue generation is just like water going down a mountain. It seeks the point of least resistance, So you need to go where the opportunity goes. Another one that Sandra wanted me to point out was we announced, I can never pronounce it.
Schiphol.
I know it's Dutch. The
Schiphol. Schiphol.
Airport.
telematics.
Yes. And this is an example of one that not only valued the flexibility of our OneNet-based technology, but they have actually contracted with us to design the network and to manage it on an ongoing basis. So there's some more kudos to our growing services organization. And for me, and again, all of these are announced, they're up on our website. For me, it's an exciting, you know, full, you know, coverage OneNet proof point because it hits on the transition management capabilities of the platforms they chose, the services capability, and our willingness and flexibility to address different kinds of communication problems in different kind of networks, such as airports.
Okay. Interesting. Really, really interesting. Wow. I didn't anticipate that you would be in all these different spaces, but it's fascinating to hear where the growth is. So I've got another question for you down a different path, and that is on NGN and just the migration to next-generation networks and whether companies have changed their thoughts on NGN or has the economy affected them? I mean, you talked a little bit about emerging markets, then you talked a little bit about reduced amounts of investment in new networks. So tell me a little bit about what's happening to next-generation networks.
Well, that's kind of like asking what's happening with cancer research or world hunger. You know, you really have to pull back the layers of the onion. I think to answer the question broadly, I think that any type of service provider looking to offer a communication service is looking at an investment that is going to scale in capacity and that is going to give him the maximum number of options depending on the personality his network takes. Is he going to be a wholesaler of bandwidth? Is he going to get into retail services? Are they residential services? Are they business services? Is it a military application? You know, there's a number of things that they have to look at, and I would say caution prevails. And so I think that ECI is very well positioned with a very technology agnostic, low cost or cost optimized multi-purpose, multi-service approach to solving these kinds of problems. I think that if you've got, you know, an all IP network mantra or you're promoting one specific core platform, you know, it's got to be all packet optical or it's got to be all Ethernet or, you know, run an overlay, run your TDM separate from your packet, I think that those put people more in a corner and make it give them less options in these times of uncertainty.
Fantastic. So I know that early last year you launched a new portfolio of CESR platforms and a new OneNet business framework. I'm curious if you could tell us a little bit about the market in terms of what the market's telling you about these product launches.
Well, it's interesting. Before the crash in the late fall, the carrier Ethernet market was supposed to be, you know, the Pandora's box of the telecom industry. Carrier Ethernet was going to solve all of the capacity and ease of use and pricing problems of large-scale, you know, multifunction networks. The somewhat interesting thing to note is some of the analyst reports coming out now for Q4 are showing a flattening of actual carrier Ethernet platform sales. And so it makes me wonder if the race to an all pure all IP network is being tapered somewhat by the comfort of not disrupting current TDM-based services. Now, this plays well for us because, you know, we're very agnostic. You know, you can have an all TDM network. You can have a mix of TDM and Ethernet and an overlay, either running Ethernet over TDM or TDM over packet. And it's all managed as one integrated virtual network, layer 0 through 2. So that plays in well for us. But it is interesting to see that at a time when bandwidth is going to explode, and we talked earlier about the drivers in the developed market and the emerging markets, I would personally hate to see carriers invest substantially over these next 2 years, which is, you know, I hope I'm not right, but probably what's going to take to shake free this economic cloud
right.
in legacy-based technology, because it's going to put us that much farther behind in the eight ball. I would love to see, you know, 3G start to take off. I'd love to see more of LTE and, you know, mobile applications. I'd love to see carriers really trying to compete on technology, not just bandwidth. But, you know, I'm not the CEO of Verizon or, you know, some of these other carriers who have to balance their operating expense with their revenue streams as well. And in times of difficulty, like we're seeing, you know, all over the world, people tend to go with what they're more comfortable with. I also, I don't think that companies have really dealt with the personnel changes, the actual service provider organizational structure of a converged network. You know, getting the data guys to integrate with the network operations guys and getting marketing to be able to launch services more quickly on top of a converged network. You still have organizations within an operator as structured as differently and as isolated as many overlay networks are today. And so maybe though I fear that, you know, technology decisions may be made because they're safe and they know them, they may buy more legacy stuff, in a need to optimize operating, reduce operating expense, maybe that will fuel them to buy more convergence-enabling platforms. So, you know, let's end on a happy note and say it's six of one, half dozen of the other.
Okay. Now, question about the... Pardon me?
I said, would you agree with me on that?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. No, absolutely. I mean, it's going to be very...
The
next couple of years are going to be...
They're either going to play it safe and buy more capacity and TDM infrastructure, or maybe the pressure to reduce operating expense will fuel them to invest in more CSER. I think just having one quarter of CSER numbers that were somewhat flat don't give us enough of a vision to, for at least me, I don't know enough to project what that means for the CSER market overall. I can tell you that the kind of services and applications that, you know, businesses and consumers require cannot be built on today's networks. And the longer that we delay this transition, the longer it's going to take us to get to that Star Trek level of beam me up, Scotty kind of communications.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. So this rough patch is going to disrupt the market in terms of investment and growth. There are two things I would be irresponsible to not ask you about, two things which I'm sure all the listeners are curious about. Number one, there's a potential $40 billion. I've heard $8 billion, $40 billion. I've heard all sorts of numbers about President Obama's, I don't have to call him president-elect anymore as of this conversation, his broadband stimulus plan. That's number one. And then number two, people are going to be listening to this podcast and saying, well, you know, these guys compete with Nortel, and Nortel's going through some unbelievable problems. What's the difference between Nortel? So those are two different questions that I've got for you.
Okay. Regarding what impact I think Obama's $80 million stimulus package is going to have on ECI is probably about as confident as I think his, you know, multi-trillion dollar bailout package for other industries going to have on our economy. You know, I just, you know, it's really hard to say. I think that we need to see what the new FCC chairman's going to do. I think Obama is going to rely on technology to take a lot of cost out, but I think that there may be some underestimation in what it's going to take to truly deploy this technology, whether it be to share health records to reduce healthcare costs or to bring broadband to every home. I don't know. There was that gentleman, I forget his name, who was trying to give, you know, every child a laptop. Do you remember him, the famous scientist?
Negroponte, maybe?
Yes, yes, yes. I was very sad to read in one of the blogs that, you know, he's now shut that down. You know, it took him so long to get that going and to get consensus that there are now cheaper platforms that do what his original PC was going to do, and
well,
so that whole vision fell apart. And
I don't even think the kids want laptops anymore. Now they want one iPhone per child, so I think it's
exactly. So, I mean, I don't want to be a naysayer, and I certainly want to stand behind my new president, but I worry that, you know, just throwing $80 million at a new, you know, communications subcommittee or whatever you want to call that is going to really fuel massive spending for communications vendors. I think there's going to be a lot of politics, and I wonder if when he has to make that trade-off versus some other basic things that our country's dealing with, if we'll really see that kind of money there. But that's definitely Laura's view. That's certainly not an ECI perspective. What was the other question that you asked?
The other one was just about, you're in a... Nortel.
Equally broad and bizarre. Nortel. That's a tough one. It's with mixed emotions that I talk about this. I've had over 25 years in this industry, and never in my career did I think I would see the end of Nortel. There are some great people there. They were a great company. And it's really, to be quite honest with you, sad to see what's happened to them. Comparing Nortel to ECI is comparing apples and oranges. Nortel had significantly different operating structure and market reach and overhead and financial position. So I wouldn't even begin to broach on that. ECI is a very tightly managed, highly cost-optimized, very customer-oriented company. When I say customer-oriented, that's not to imply that Nortel wasn't, but we are very much driven by the needs of our install base. We're definitely innovators. We've got some of the best engineers in the world, but we are very much driven by the needs of our customers or key opportunities that we're targeted at. Nortel, I think, at one time, and I can't believe I'm saying this, they're not anymore, they were one of the giants. They were out there, and it showed in their headcount, their operating expense. They did R&D just for the sake of R&D, not maybe necessarily knowing what the end game was. A lot of ECI's investments are fueled by specific customer requirements or a specific opportunity that we're gunning for. So it's, we don't do that field of dreams, if you build it, they will come sort of approach. So I would say, there's not a fair comparison there. We are very in tune to who the Nortel customers are. I think we've got a wonderful path for them to migrate to. As somebody with a recently announced carrier Ethernet platform, though we're agnostic about, PBT and some of those technology wars, I think it was a distraction. And I'm not sure if this will simplify the distraction and allow people to rally around MPLS. But in a nutshell, I just think it's really sad. And of course, like for any successful vendor, it's an opportunity to go after, additional market share. If the market's going to be somewhat flat, then, there's a ripe spot to go take market share from. But in terms of correlating it, could this be the same for ECI? They don't align at all. It's not even right to look at it that way. We're two very, very different companies.
Thank you for...
Unless I'm missing something.
No, thank you for addressing that. Well, obviously Nortel's a much larger company in terms of its different product, as many product lines as you have. They have more product lines, and they target enterprise and contact centers, and they've got a number of different things that they do. So it's obviously a different... while you're in the same category financially, I'm sure the analysts will put you in the same category. There are some differences, so I'm glad we addressed that. So with that, I'd like to just wrap by asking you what we can expect from your company in 2009, and if you can give me anything about the future beyond that, I'm sure the listeners are going to be thrilled to hear it.
As I said before, we remain very optimistic about 2009. We're not giving a specific outlook in terms of our order intake or revenue forecast. I think that's the prudent thing that almost all vendors have done. We remain very cautious in our operating expense. I told you that we've certainly tightened up our marketing budgets. We continue to invest in field and R&D. And we're going to stand behind our OneNet framework. We really believe that partnering with our customers to help them manage growth that maybe they themselves don't even understand and give them a very cost-optimized solution that gives them lots of flexibility is something that they really value. And so we continue to stay and remain focused on our services business. As I said, we hit our milestones there. I'm pleased with our carrier Ethernet momentum, but we certainly aren't backing off our flagship product, our MSPP XDM platforms and our access business. Do look for us to make some moves in adjacent businesses such as software and some really interesting ways to bring that to market. And I look forward to staying in touch, Rich.
Likewise. We've been listening today to Laura Howard, who is the CMO of ECI Telecom. We've been speaking today on January the 20th, a cold Tuesday in 2009 in Connecticut, where I'm located. And during the course of this podcast, the new President Barack Obama has been inaugurated, and it's an exciting time for the country and for the world. And I am thrilled, Laura, to have you speaking with me on such a historic day, and I wish you success in the new year. Thank you for being on the podcast.
Thank you very, very much. It was my pleasure.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.